Yeah,
you can't get in that
over
fucking middle
there,
thing. Yeah, go over there so no one can see you. If anyone here is by any means interested in what the journey looks like to go from 3K to 300K per month in 18 months, what systems would take someone to 20K, then 80K, then 300K, this might not be a bad interview for you to hop in and have any care factor towards viewing it all. I'm Chris Morrison. I'm here with Chase McAllister. And we're here to sort of chat through what helped Chase go from 3 to 300K. So that's literally 100X, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty fucking cool. Chase is a longtime client times two.
Yeah. We'll definitely get that out.
Longtime client times two. And a really good friend as well. We drank a lot of beers on Saturday night together at here in Toronto, which was a bunch of fun. And today is all about Chase and a little bit of a celebration and a little bit of a reversal. I don't remember if you remember the first time that you and I met was on a podcast.
Yes. Actually, yeah, which is something that I've leveraged for a while to kind of get into the industry. But funny that you say that. I had been watching your content and I'm like, let me like spend an hour with him and give him some value too. Come on my podcast, man. And then I got an hour with you and I was like, oh, we should probably look into moving into his services or something. I think me and my partner both sat there and were like, shit, he knows what he's talking about.
Which is weird because it's a hard accent to understand.
Sorry, I can swear on this, right?
Fuck yeah, you can.
Oh, cool.
Fuck yeah, you can. And I guess give us a little bit of an insight as to who you are and what you guys do for the insurance industry. We'll do that and we'll go into like where it all started and all to the stuff as well. What got you from 3 to 20, 20 to 80, and then 80 to 300. And just before we do that, if anyone would like a copy of the documented SOPs that we actually do have that we know that Chase used from us, I have a SOP that I've created for everyone here on this, on the marketing strategy, the appointment setting and sales strategy they used, and the actual team and account management accountability system that they actually used to put all this stuff in place for what we were able to actually help with. And if you guys like a copy of that, just drop the word SOP in the chat and we'll get that across to you guys too. But Chase, dude, talk me through. What do you guys do for the market and who the hell are you guys to the insurance space?
Yeah, so we generate live transfers. So what we do is we get leads on the phone, generate from our own insurance brand online, get those leads on the phone and then transfer them to the licensed insurance agents across the states and some pretty big insurance companies directly. So how the hell did we get into that? I think we really started first and foremost on advertising for clients. I'll just kind of keep this like more digital marketer style so you guys understand the how we evolved into just basically a call center. We started running ads for a wide spread of clients. Actually, when we started with Chris, we had a multiple different niches that we were kind of planning to go under and we're kind of tossed between, you know, going through one or real estate insurance or just small businesses, which we all know isn't typically just a niche. But so we started doing just
fight to the death on that though.
Yeah.
Fight to the death on that though. Go on
for
though.
Sure. But for us, we started just running ads for clients. Got a really good result in the insurance space. Chris told us, hey, you should probably stick to that. We fought him on it. We continued on. And then eventually down the road, once we got to the customer journey and understood how clients sign up online, get on a conversation with an insurance agent and sign up for a policy, we really started to, okay, well, what's the next step that we can accomplish for the client? What's the next, okay, we'd run ads, but what else can we do? Can we set appointments? Can we go the extra mile to make that lead more tangible for the client? Because we all know if you're in the lead generation space or running ads, leads aren't the end all be all. You still have to get them on the phone. You still have to close them. You still have to have proper pipelines in place to get them into an appointment, et cetera. So we just decided, okay, it just kind of evolved down the line into eventually now, okay, here's the most tangible thing I could give them as a marketer was here's somebody on the phone wanting to have a conversation about life insurance. And there's at that point, there's the line. Like if I went any further, I'm basically selling the policy myself. So we just kept going down the line and eventually got to the finish line and said, okay, we can't go any further. This is all we can do. And just got really, really good at that, which is getting the person on the phone, qualifying them the way that they needed to be qualified. So it's, you know, not a lay down, but it's a general conversation, which if you know sales, it's conversations are the end all be all, not the leads, right? So now we provide a predictable method for them to have, you know, 8 to 9 conversations as an insurance agent each day. And then we also provide top experts in the industry to help them hone in their telesales craft and get better at closing those calls as well. So kind of a hybrid / direct marketing company, but yeah, it's top leveling.
Call center and consulting is probably like a good combination to the way you guys run the offer, which I think is such an amazing structural concept at the same time too. And I think that once you get to a certain stage, it's definitely a lever you can pull, not something you would do from day one, but definitely something you could do past that 50, 60, 70 K a month stage, because you need to get good at your craft first.
And you also have to have clients that are really good at their craft too. I mean, for our model, like we created as an ecosystem. So instead of hiring customer success managers, hiring coaches, et cetera, we just said, here's a discount on our calls. You do really, really well. Can you help others? And here's the box that we want you to coach them in. Mm-hmm. And it's done really, really well. And we can lean on the entire client base to help build the client base as well, which is
completely.
We kind of stumbled on that. It was just a light bulb idea one day. And we're like, well, let's call somebody. And it worked out. So very lucky in that regard. Very lucky in that regard. In a lot of regards. But
for a lot of people, they can't seem to break through that like 8 to 10K mark, right? Mm-hmm. That first stage you're going from 3 to 20, because I think we did that in like 12 weeks, a bit less.
Yeah.
In the first place.
Yeah.
What do you think was the main thing that was missing to get to that? Because I think that's the first real milestone. Because that's when you actually have like real money coming in consistently and all to the stuff as well. Like what do you think was missing that made that possible for you? Don't have, right?
So for me, it was actually one piece of advice you gave me. It was go and this is not financial advice, but it was an advice that he gave me in a business spectrum. So he said, go rent an apartment you can't afford and I guarantee you'll make rent. And truthfully, what the biggest mind shift for me was, okay, I brought on a partner. I brought a couple of VAs just with overhead in a 10K. So I basically all the 10K I spent it. It was gone. So I was like, I have to make more to make money. So it was forcing myself to put my back against the wall and just do it. And I knew that if I put in the reps, because I had the systems, thank goodness to your program, it allowed me to just put in the work and systemized it. So it was like, okay, well, I couldn't get comfortable with the 10 grand, so I might as well throw it all away. And then when I got to 20 grand, I threw it all away. And when I got to 30 grand, I threw it all away. When I got to 40 grand, I threw it all away. Cause I knew I was like the end goal was 150, really. Now it's surpassed that, but the end goal is 150, cause that's where I would start making money. So for me, it didn't matter the 10,000, the 20,000, the 30,000. And eventually once you start making money, you know, the thousands turn into 10,000s and the 10,000s turn into 100. It's always going to get bigger, but you just have to keep stacking. And so for me, anyways, my mentality was just like, spend it all. And I have a saying, it's like money's energy too. And if I don't see, I actually look at how well we're doing by the amount of money I pay out to like some of our vendors. I have wires sitting on my desk. And literally I can see like, oh, we're doing really, really well. I mean, just without looking at QuickBooks, et cetera, I can see that like if I'm spending money, the energy is coming right back, and typically we're making more. So I don't know if I'm just blabbling on about that, but
no. I think that's a really good point too, right? Because I was only mentioning, I don't know if you saw in that like the client group chat yesterday, right? It's like one of the biggest things I think a lot of people have a fear of committing to is investing in something, right? Like whether it be investing in an agency, investing in a fucking coaching company, investing in team, investing in ads for themselves, investing in whatever it is. There's always a, in the beginning, a limiter of some sort that makes them feel as if that, is this going to be like, am I going to make another bad decision?
Yeah.
Usually where it comes from, if that makes sense. But I think I've noticed myself as well, as like the more that goes out with the right things, the like it's a natural consequence that it starts coming back in, just because this is one of the things I've noticed is by holding back and not doing it, this is where the energy part comes in. It's where you don't allow yourself to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Have you found that to be similar? And is that why you were mentioning that as well?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like, even just to go back to it, like for me, I, in the beginning stages, I think it's a limiting belief of like, asking for the money, just on the like the very, very starting stages of you starting a business, just for the guys that are doing $3,000-$4,000 a month right now, it was hard to ask somebody for $1,500 a month. It was hard to ask somebody for $5,000 a month until you start paying that out and you're like, monies are just, it's, that's just a figure. So mm-hmm. you start to become accustomed to those numbers. You start to get, you know, a little bit more confident for asking for those numbers too. And I think those are just, that's just built in stages. I truthfully never had that issue. I was always good at asking for the money, but a lot of businesses I think struggle with that too. Is like, especially starting out, they're too shy. They're too shy to be that closer yet, because they haven't seen money flow the way it should yet.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting concept too, right? Like as a natural consequence of the money going out, you know that you need to ask for it, because if you don't, then the outflow will overtake the inflow and you're in a position where essentially you're fucked.
Yeah.
Like, and that's usually not where we want to end up.
No. And to go back to like the next stage, which was truthfully like getting to like 30, 50,000. I think 50,000 is like the benchmark. It's where we, oh shit, we actually kind of have a business here.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And then you really start to like understand what predictability means, because you need to sustain that now, because now you're at 50,000. You probably have more team members. You probably have a lot bigger client base that are expecting you to be there. Maybe you have some goodwill out there that you need to now pay up on. So the risks obviously get bigger, but I feel like now at 50,000, you have a machine of some sort. You have some sort that you can, okay, now we just need to either duplicate or get really, really higher, much more higher outputs out of the small team that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of the route we did. We made sure that we could maximize the amount of team that we needed out of what the performance that we needed as well. You know, and we structured our company in a very lean manner on like a commission base for our call centers, et cetera. So mm-hmm. it allowed us to grow at a rapid pace without needing a massive amount of cash flow to keep up with it, which I think is equally as important. I think having a business that it runs lean but also has great margins is going to save you. Mm-hmm. A couple of lessons that I learned along the way is I sold myself too short, trying to be a perfect price for the customer, when really it needs to be a perfect price for the program and the value that you can provide and the result that you need to get. But you know, in any situation, you're going to be, it's going to be a roller coaster. So there's going to be months where you literally need cash. Mm-hmm. So you're going to sell anything. Hopefully you get into an even stage and you have a predictable process in place that you don't have to have those ups and downs, but inevitably they're going to happen. As long as you have processes in place, you shouldn't be affected or impacted too much. But
I try to, and I remember mentioning this to you, and like you may have remembered it or not from like early on, but it was like, there's going to be months where things feel like unnecessary chaos, especially when you're bringing a new team on, and especially when you are investing into new things you didn't expect to be investing into, right? Like a certain team expense or a certain, it could be a million different things, right? And I think one of the biggest things that I genuinely try to remind people to do is like build up cash reserves, right? Like sell like crazy, deliver like crazy, but ensure that keep whatever you know that you need like on hand for at least operating expenses for at least a few months in the bare minimum before you start taking your foot off the pedal. But even then, don't take your foot off the pedal. But like make sure you have that in place before you do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest things that I think too many people, probably in especially money energetics, like if you don't have it there, it can be hard to feel like there's flexibility with it might be good terminology for it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm very, very lucky of the team that I have too. Like they've been there since the beginning. So they also understand the ups and downs too. They don't really get too defeated when we have slow months. And I've set the expectation too on the team is like, look, there's going to be good and slow, there's going to be busy, there's going to be slow months. You just need to be able to prepare for them and be able to at least try to keep the gaps between the bad and the good a little bit smaller. My phone is
it's going wild. Too many. The call center's working.
We're live right now.
The next barrier that a lot of people actually end up having a hard time with, right, is like breaking through from 50 up to like that 80 or 100 consistently, if that makes sense, right? What do you feel? Because like for you to get to 50 to 60, like marketing and sales must exist.
Yeah.
Right. For you to have surpassed and gotten up to 80 with 100, what was the difference?
I had already built a massive following because I've been consistently putting out marketing that it was easy for me to just like, okay, let's utilize the entire market. Cause I truthfully wasn't, we can kind of get into that too, but coming back, I left probably at 60, 70 in a month. And then, you know, we're like, oh, we got this, you know, yada, yada, yada. We know best. And then realize shit, we don't need best because we need the accountability. You need the coaching through all the different stages and ups and downs in your business. You're going to need Chris to help you reformulate, re-engineer, and keep going forward. So for us, once we came back, it was like, okay, I have a massive following to me in the insurance space, you know, that I was not capitalizing on. So it was just like, okay, how do we go full tilt on capitalizing on that now? The nice part is I had done all the legwork in the beginning. So I had already built a great following that I've consistently posted to, consistently put authority out, you know, bringing top guys onto podcasts that might not be my client, but they automatically just associate me with those people right off the hop because we're on a podcast together. That has just helped me build such authority in the space. When I make a post, when I do a lead magnet, it works really, really, really well. And luckily I have good staff in place that can take that lead and turn it into a sale. But, not having those systems, I would have been wearing all the hats. I would have been trying to sell like I was doing 60, 70 grand a month, selling it all myself, then going working CSM, then realizing sales were down. So I'm going back and then I'm trying to sell some more. Then I'm like, shit, I need all these different systems. Oh my gosh. So it just became this consistent up and down graph. We would hit 100, come back down. We would hit 90, we'd come back down to 60. And 60 was like that whew, take a breath mark. Like, okay, we got it here. Why can't we get here? And then it was just, okay, how do we ensure that our priority right now is developing systems within the company so we can duplicate these roles and put people in place that do a good enough job that we're still getting the performance that we need. So then it was getting those systems in place and then greasing them up, putting as much as I possibly could through them, breaking them, those systems a couple times again, and then re-engineering them again, right? Because I think with any scale, you're going to have some break, and that's good because it learn, you learn and learn and learn, and your business eventually becomes like a fortitude, and you can't penetrate it, right?
What did you put in place systems-wise that didn't work and did work?
Ooh, that's kind of a general topic, but...
Okay, so you mentioned then that you had some that broke, right? Some that you intentionally broke and some that broke like unintentionally at the same time as well, right? So taking it away from a general question, a lot of people here are probably wondering like, okay, cool, like what systems do I need to have in place in order for me to be able to achieve that in the first place? And what ones should I avoid, or what mistakes should I avoid system-wise that might protect me or prevent me from experiencing the same that Chase might have experienced and that he can share?
Okay, so, that's a good question. So for us, when we were hitting like 50, 60, we had a couple VAs that were doing jobs that probably one VA could do. So those are systems. You think the system is actually a full-time job, but really it's not. So what we put in place is we use Time Doctor, and you can use a bunch of different time softwares, but setting up those tasks so we can time them. We've started timing every task in the SOP. This should actually take this amount of long. So we could actually gauge what does that position entail and how long does it actually take to fulfill. And what we found was there was probably two or three employees that we didn't need, saving us a decent amount of money in the month, but also giving us more robust systems because we knew that the outputs were there. So we could also duplicate it. So the breaking was not putting proper procedures in place for daily tasks for each individual. And I think once you get busy and you're at 60-70K, you're thinking about all the different hats. You're probably not devoting enough time to each person and training them in the way that they need to be. So is there an actual system that broke? Probably not, but there probably wasn't a system that – it was a system that we thought was a system that – probably wasn't a system at scale. So for an example too, like even just messaging, internal messaging. Now we used to use Slack or used to use Discord and just tell, hey, this person is canceling or this person is moving to this. And we would have a message channel. Now we just have form responses because we know the typical things that are going to happen. And it gives us a complete log of literally everything that's happened. So we can go back and dissect it. Another system that we never really did is we never tracked like client movement. We never tracked like sales in a way that I knew the marketing was working in the way that we needed to. Like there was just, we just kind of got the people in and got them the product and then got them out. Right. So for, I wish I had like a specific system to kind of go over, but especially internal communication, systemizing internal communication using forms has been a massive game changer for us. So for example, like if a client's canceling, a team member submits a form saying this person's canceling, gives a comment, and all those forms, depending on the department, get submitted to a master log. We have everything and everything that's ever happened in an entire log, which truthfully, when you're trying to scale things, is essential because there's so many moving parts. If you have so many moving clients, like I think right now we have 122 clients. There's a lot, it's a lot of clients. It's a lot of clients.
Yeah.
No matter what, with a team of probably six, like, you know, in internal guys and a bunch of subcontracted dialers. But yeah, internal communication is massive, and systemizing that would be a massive game changer. If you're at 60 trying to get to 100, that's going to be the game changer because you might be able to get 100 in revenue, but systemizing and holding it is a very, very different thing.
Yeah, I think another one at that stage, well, there and above is just to your point of internal communication is huge. But the other one is like, the actual communication cadence that you have with the team based on projects that are currently running right now, right? So as an example, right? Like if you do have a, and you should have a huddle, right? At least three times a week. Like how are people currently trained on preparing and showing up to the huddle so they can present what they're working on and what they're actually doing right now and what updates they need and what help they need, and be able to be comfortable enough to show up and say, hey, this is the thing I'm not actually doing so well with right now. Is it okay if I get some help?
I'd also like to, and this is kind of a perfect segue, but exactly that. Our morning huddles, it's a structure. We also have a suggestion box in our messaging channel. So you put in suggestions, we'll bring them up in our meetings. But and structuring those. So if you have issues throughout the day, you're bringing that to your morning huddle, because we're going to talk to our end of day huddle. So we want to bring it up, make sure it's either finished for the day or brought up pertinent and urgent in the morning. But for us, what's also been a big game changer is when we're communicating with our team, when we're meeting for these huddles, what was the biggest difference starting out once we got to that 60K was putting those guys in a role that they had to think for themselves. Mm-hmm. That's a really hard thing to do, is that not everything can be just SOP'd. They're going to need either time, your time teaching them, or just natural development as well. So their own specific time. And for me, it's about putting them in a role that makes them think for themselves. So for example, when we got to like 80, 90, I stopped working. I like literally took a month off. I was working, but I didn't do a single fucking thing. And when I say that, like, I didn't do a single task for the business. I made sure that it was delegated and somebody did it and had to think for themselves, which would actually made a massive impact when we try to go to 100 to 200. Because now people are in their own departments. They are responsible and are leaders within their departments, which is a massive change for me as the business owner, because I'm not having to look at every little string to make sure it's truthfully going the way it is. They've been able to develop themselves and know the box that we need to cover within their roles. And can be confident in making decisions as well as making adjustments to those roles. So if you have a suggestion, hey, you want to adjust this protocol, et cetera, put in the suggestion box. And if we approve it, obviously, I'm going to thank you for that, because it's obviously advancements in our company, but keeping it open room so they can become a leader and also feel, you know, somewhat responsible for the growth of the company too, right? Putting people in their shoes that they feel like they're doing something impactful for the company is huge. Giving the reins to do so, which does take a bit of trust issues. Like at first, for me, I was terrible at it. Like I'm very kind of a control freak in that sense, especially when it comes to the business. And it was a game. That's why I literally was like, you know what, we're doing really well in numbers. I'm going to use this time because I know no matter what, we're not going to lose the business. So I'm just going to sit back and let's see how well they do without me. And then it also, I found out where the gaps were, and where I needed to train to make sure that those gaps were filled.
I think one thing I've always admired about you is the willingness to just fucking try something, right? Like willingness to give anything a shot, if that makes sense, right? Like that's something I've always, always, always admired, because you see so many people who take such a, I don't want to say non-optimistic, but just a really careful approach to everything. And not to say you're not careful, but it's just like, if there's something there, you'll give it a shot and you'll fucking go for it right there and then.
I'm a firm believer you do not learn how to swim by standing outside the pool. And like for me, I've thrown a bunch of shit at the wall. Thank God this stuck. And I'm throwing shit at the wall. But like seriously, like, and that's the premise, but I didn't get in the position I am today being trying to systemize everything before I jump. That's not – and that's why I have Wesley. Wesley's my partner. Shout out to Wesley if you're watching this.
Shout out to Wes. Gem of a human.
He's the yin to my yang. I'm the guy that jumps in the pool. He sits back, makes sure the water wings, the safety net, like all the ropes there just in case. But he's there for me. And that's what you need. You need somebody – to be the jump, you also need somebody to be like calculated, carefree, because they're calculated. But I'm the high anxiety. Let's just jump at it. He's the low anxiety. let's think about it, which really is a game changer. So if you can find somebody that is your yin to your yang, and you guys can have a healthy work relationship, because that's also really hard. I think it's very important. But that keeps me jumping, because I know he's got my back, right? If it was just me and I didn't have him, I probably would be a little bit more skeptical. But I'm also like, mama didn't raise a bitch. Like, let's just do this.
On that, do you know what I think one of the most underrated or under-communicated skills for doing something at a high level is the skill of conflict resolution. Be it internally with team, with clients or whatever it is, like the skill, I think I heard, was it Layla Hormozy or some shit like that? They were saying like one of the biggest determining factors of how far you go is how well you can handle hard conversations, situations and times, if that makes sense, like how well you can handle them and how well you can resolve conflict in the first place at the same time as well. And I know that with conversations that I won't speak for you, but like even conversations I've had with you about our internal conversations within our company, I even mentioned at our client event the other day, was like, Faris and I don't agree on fucking like 80% of things, but that's the value we have to each other, right? Like the butting of heads is actually one of the best things that's possible, because we actually like, how do I describe this? We're chatting about this earlier today. It's like, one of the biggest benefits is like we trigger so many of each other's insecurities that like, oh shit, you have to become better at that point in time. And the conflict has to be resolved, because that's what helps create the conflict resolution in clients and then in prospects. And then in everything that stops things from moving forward is a conflict that wasn't attended to usually. Usually anyway. Or of like not attended to or intentionally avoided because you were scared. And I think that the skill of conflict resolution is something that is totally unspoken about. And if learned effectively, people would go a lot further, a lot quicker. Do you agree?
Oh, 100%. First of all, me and Wesley, butt heads. We just did it because of the training the other day, because of the training over the weekend. You did what's your non-negotiables and what's your preferables, right? We did the exercise on Monday. I was like, I want you to list every non-negotiable you have for clients coming in, every preferable that you think you know is not like you prefer it, but we'll still sell them. So we looked at both of ours, and they were complete opposite. They're
different, yeah.
But there was some core ones in there. So we're like, okay, well, whatever we agreed on, that's our non-negotiable. Whatever our preferables, you can go screw yourself, I'll screw mine. We'll just argue about those for the rest of eternity, because we'll never get it, but allow us to optimize. And then to go back to the point of like being scared of the conflict, we really, really, really early on, I think, especially with advertising and why people don't really go the extra step while they're just setting up the ads, etc., or they don't go like, here, I'm going to call the ads, I'm going to prep them for the sale, etc., like the extent that we go to, is because they're nervous of the conflict of not knowing or how to handle if it doesn't work with that client. For example, for me with live transfers, we got nervous because we didn't understand the business too much on the back end or what's happening after the transfer. But without asking those questions, without being confident and being not scared of the conflict that could arise, and not going through those conflicts with clients about how these leads should be handled, how like the most common things that we deal with is mostly mindset. How do we deal with these mindset issues? How do we overcome these mindset issues of clients coming in? They might make a couple sales 2 days, have two bad days, and then they're total dickheads. How do we get over that, right? And those questions we were always nervous about. That's why, here, let me just set up the ads for you. You know, I don't know anything about the sales portion. That's up to you. But I know how to generate the ads. But then we're like, fuck, we're not giving them a result that's actually so tangible in this sense. So we're like, oh, what conflict or what discussion do we have with that client to go the extra little bit? Or can we set these appointments? Okay, well, what if it doesn't work out? Well, they're typically, they didn't show or whatever it was. Then we're attacking that conflict and head on. And then it just kind of snowballed. So it's kind of a great analogy, what I was talking about before, of how we just inevitably went to the end of the road. Is that's probably wise, we were never scared of the conflict that was going to be arose from that.
I don't think there's an area of the business where this isn't relevant either. I was chatting with another client the other day, and they were saying they went 12 sales calls with no close. And I'm like, well, did you ask the people why they didn't close? They're like, no. I'm like, do you think it would be useful to have an answer to that question? They're like, yes. I'm like, cool.
How do you get to a sales call and the end of a sales call and don't know why they didn't close, though? That means you didn't close them, you know?
It could be a million different reasons as to why. It could be wrong fit. It could be like they couldn't see the fit or whatever it is. Like, there's so many different reasons. But similarly, when you're actually delivering to a client, it's like why they're not staying for a long time. It's like you must have that hard conversation about what it is that's preventing them from wanting to stay right now at the same time as well. Like when they are on that exit or with team. This is a huge one. Like cracking the team code of recruiting and going from like not cold, but like first day through to really, 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 really culture-based indoctrination with that person. Like that's hard. And it's like having those hard conversations with people on exit if they do exit and like, well, what was it about us or the culture that prevented you from wanting to stay?
Mm.
Or what was it about you, us, and all these things that prevented you from wanting to actually, like, something in my eye. What was it about my eyeball that prevented me from wanting to actually see straight right now?
Or conversations with yourself. Like, was it us that, you know, we had to fire somebody recently? Was it us that didn't put him in a position to succeed? So you really have to have conflict with yourself, too. And a lot of people do not want to do that.
Completely.
And you'll just be... completely clouded from what's actually going on in your business, right?
I think sales team is the easiest description of this. It's like, well, what did the sales team suck, or did you just not provide them what they needed to succeed? Right? Like, did they have a sales playbook? Did they have adequate like opportunity flow? Were they trained effectively on how to deal with all certain situations? Was someone asking the salesperson, i.e. their manager, hard questions around what they're too scared to bring up about their lack of performance, or what they're too scared to say about what isn't working right now from what they're being provided in the opportunity framework that you provided for them, because they're too scared of actually raising their voice. Mm-hmm. Right? Like all the, like I am so confident to be the first person to get to the truth there. I think we spoke about this in the weekend, right? Like getting to the truth is the most important thing.
I think in sales, in every aspect of the business, if there's any type of avoidance or you're lying about it in your own head, typically you can only last for so long and it'll come and bite yourself in the ass. Those are lessons learned. Like, attack it now, it's going to just pile up and come at you later. So you might as well put it on right now.
Totally. Dude, this has been awesome. I guess... was there anything that you think that you didn't mention that would be worth mentioning about the like 100 to 200, 300 gap that was impactful enough to
share? It comes a lot quicker than 0 to 1. It comes a lot quicker. But and even in any sense, it's not like we hit 350. I think we'll probably be around 2 this month, cheerfully, which is a decent hit on revenue. But we've sustained, you know, an additional, you know, 50K, and probably go back up a little bit more. But with anything, with any high peak, you're going to have a decent drop off at some point. Not drop off in client, but just systems get broken and you need to refix them inevitably. And that's just natural. But the thing from 100 to 3, once we were hitting hundreds, it was like, do not chill the fuck out. Like, I'm so hungry right now. It's insane. Like, I'm so hungry for a lot of cash. And, like, that was my main focus. And I know the entire team is overly hungry. So it was just a matter of don't take your foot off the pedal. We've been slaving like a dog for 3 months. Everybody seemed tired. But it was like, we need to put in another 3 months of just going ham sales, full on pedal to the floor to get it there. So we understood what it felt like and what it tasted like. And then we're like, okay, that's easy. Like, we can keep doing this. And then it's a lot easier now. The paychecks are a little bit bigger too. I mean, for me, it's been a fucking long time. So it's nice to finally, you know, be in a safe spot. And I think so 100K, you're going to always be in that reinvesting. Now when you hit 200, you're like, okay, like we're making good money here. Now your team, your probably your fixed costs are still the exact same, but now you're doing double. So now the cash is staying a lot bit more longer in your bank account. Now it's starting to accumulate a little bit better. And now we can start to think, okay, now we need to be 6 months down the road. So for right now, we've always kind of been 3 months ahead, me and Wesley, of like, what are we doing in 3 months? Where are we going to be in 3 months? How do we get there? And now we're 6 months, and hopefully soon we'll be to a year and looking at 2 years down the road. Okay, where's the company, right? We have a picture, but like actively working on a 6 month, you know, timeline right now, which is awesome. And I'm super excited. You know, now it's about, okay, I'm trying to put partners in place to really establish this company and keep it here for my grandkids. Also maybe having a sweet exit plan here soon too. So, you know, we're doing well. And I honestly owe a lot to you, man. You've been awesome for me and Wes. Like the things that we've learned and the guidance that you've been able to give me is I couldn't put a dollar figure on it. Yeah, I wish I could say more, but I'm kind of like at a loss for words to describe how much I truly appreciate you. Because there's been too many coaching programs I've taken, etc. But I actually had great access to you, and that means a lot. You take the time to learn the business, understand what we're doing. Okay, it's not, here's just something, it's cookie cutter. A lot of things are cookie cutter, but not a lot of things are. And I think you do a really good job of making sure that each individual, not just myself in the program, but your clients get that type of access. And for me, one, you always have an SOP. I think a lot of our internal SOPs probably look just like Chris's SOPs. I've learned a lot from his SOP building, from my SOP building. And even just go back, like there's three trainings that I suggested Chris we throw in here. The last one is a game changer. And if you're at like 60, 70K a month, I think it's good to have, because now you're probably building a team. And that just shows you all the different buckets in your company and all the KPIs that each individual needs to make. It keeps everybody accountable. And when I seen that for the first time, it allowed me to visualize how the business should operate. And it allowed me to see the business in a data figure, which just was like mind blowing to me at some point. And then even just like the original, you know, predictable pipeline. This is something that for me, my profile, if I didn't do the steps that he's teaching everybody else in this group and in his client group to do, works. I went from having 1,500 friends that were all my freaking high school friends to having 5,000 insurance agents as friends, and now probably 30,000 Facebook followers that are all insurance agents. And that's just through dedication and time of building and building and building and doing the basics that Chris gives you literally a step-by-step document on how to do. Almost so easy that a monkey could do it. You just have to come to the trainings and learn a little bit extra on the side too, right? Like, it's not rocket science. You've made it very, very easy for folks, Chris. And I appreciate you.
Thank you for saying nice words. like genuinely, thank you for saying nice words. Thank you for being genuinely just your character of I'll just try it is the thing that made you successful. That's my opinion, right? Like, We're coming on well over 300 people that we've actively worked with, that I've worked with on a one-to-one basis. And like, you just don't see that willingness very often, if that makes sense. And when that comes around, it bleeds into everything else at the same time too. We haven't not butt heads before. Like, that's happened for sure. But I think that's, I think that's a part of a relationship where there's intentional challenging, if that makes sense. And I think that you guys have a fuckload more in you at the same time too. You have a fuckload more in you. And I don't think it's just going to be an insurance agent work, if that makes sense. I think you guys have a lot more inside you at the same time too. And it's really, 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 really exciting to watch what's happening. And I'm excited for the next stages too, man.
Appreciate you, man.
So, so, so excited. We should see if we can catch up again once before I leave.
Yeah.
I'm like, I leave in 5 days, funnily enough. If there's an opportunity. Yeah, right? If there's an opportunity, we should. If not, it's totally okay.
Yeah,
stay on back on track with all this stuff, right? Like, if you had any words for anyone who's like, how the fuck do I get to where Chase is? And it could be good or bad words too, right? Like, it could be like a chase your dreams thing, or it could be like a, hey, fucking don't do this. Or it could be a multitude of different things, if that makes sense, right? But I guess from your own core values and after we worked out on the weekend, like what, you know, what you don't want or whatever it is, right? Like what stuck, what has stayed, and what is it that you want people to know based off what you believe should stay based on your values?
Focus. Literally just focus for me is the biggest piece of advice that I could give somebody even starting out or in any stage. Is it sucks. I can't stand it. I'm the worst at focusing, but I force myself because I have no choice to now, but I have to focus and can stay focused to the same thing. I think a lot of the times where we could have gotten a little more ahead is because we were too worried about the outside shiny objects and trying new things. When this acquisition model, every time we go, oh, let's try doing a different ad strategy. Let's try to do this different marketing hack. Oh, we don't need this. We can just do on referrals. It's never been the same result as what we get from the systems that Chris has taught me. With doing organic DMing the way that Chris does it, with lead magnets, with the offer linking, etc., nothing compares to having somebody on the sales call that you already consumed your content, knows you can solve the problem that they need solved, and truthfully want to have a conversation about that problem too, and also like trust and know you, which is huge. So focus on that and stick to it. Even if you have bad weeks, because you're going to have bad weeks, even if you have bad months, stick to it because it will pay out, especially it exponentially grows because your following doesn't stop. The people that are in that industry, your niche, don't stop knowing who you are because you're constantly posting. And there might be people that like drop off, but they still know who you are. And then when the next person sees all your stuff and they connect at a seminar and they start talking about, oh, do you know Chase McAllister? Perfect. You know Chase McAllister. It will just snowball. Just keep going, dude. Like, just keep going because it's gnarly. To think where I'm at in the space and I'm pretty well known in the space now is mind-boggling to me. Like, it's mind-boggling because it's all just been basic daily steps. Put reps at 25 people a day. Make my 3 to 4 posts. Post in the group. Put out a value ad. Put out a lead magnet. It's super simple. Just do it. And do it consistently over time. That's what's going to get you the result. Nothing else is going to do that. There is no ad strategy. There's no latest hack that I can give you. It's just that. And, like, pure grit of not giving up.
Even with ads and all other methodologies, I believe the only purpose of them is to actually put you in a position where you have more of an audience.
And I'm not saying that they don't work.
But no, they definitely work. They 1,000% work. I just think that if you're going to do them, do it so it increases the size of the audience that you have so you can do those basics, because you just increase the volume of people who do know who you are, do know what you do, and already want to buy what you're selling. And then the chatter happens, right? Like that conversation where someone says, like, do you know Chase? Like, fuck yeah, I do.
And if you can get the consistent art, like monthly recurring, you know, your good front-end sales from your profile each and every month, and you want to increase that, but you maybe have maxed out your profile in the short term, but you want to add a new sales guy, you can obviously add different marketing channels on top of it, but that should be the core. It should always be the core. And that's one of my biggest mistakes, is not keeping it the core. But glad we do now. So.
Appreciate you, man. Again, if anyone wants to connect with Chase, I'll leave his details below and all sort of stuff.
Yeah, don't message me. I have the only person, if you're on this group, you should be messaging is that guy. I have no secret sauce or no secret hack to give you, other than I'm just going to put you in a group chat with Chris because he's the guy with the methods. So
thank you for that. Go fuck myself. And dude, honestly, again, just I can't be more grateful for the level of effort you guys have put in. And just honestly, dude, I'm just grateful for the relationship we have as well. Like Saturday night, especially, like really brought that down, like genuinely, right? Had a lot of fun. We had a lot of beers between like the 12 of us that were there or whatever. And it was fucking fantastic. And I can't wait for the next time we get to do it all again, probably at the same time too. It's been an honor, man. Thank you so much.
We'll talk to you guys.
Thank you so much, everyone. I hope you all enjoyed it. And if you guys would like to take the freebie stuff that we said before, just comment SOP below and we'll get that out to you guys, okay? Peace.